All right. So, wow, we talked about a lot of information today. I mean, we talked about everything from checking ID to subscribing witness to filling out acknowledgments and jurats. I mean, it was a lot of information. So what I want to do now is go through what we like to call the speed run. Now, the purpose of the speed run is to go over everything again, but at a very high rate of speed. Now, this sounds crazy. I'm really about to cover 6 hours of content in such a short amount of time. Yes, that's exactly what we're about to do. And the reason why is that we've discovered that listening and watching this information one time is just not enough. It's fine for getting the first introductory lessons, but I want you to be prepared for the test. So we found that by going through this information a second time and by doing it at a very high rate of speed, then what happens is it gets sunk into your subconscious so that you are ready and prepared for when you take the test. So put away the pencils and put away the pens. You don't need to take notes. What we're about to do is kind of like a review, but it's a very fast review. I want you just to sit, listen, and watch and absorb the information because it's going to come at you really, really fast. But that's intended in order to get into your subconscious so that you know this information for the test. Okay, so get ready because here we go. The first thing we talked about is what exactly is a notary, and they are a public servant, an impartial witness, a third party to the document. Another way to say this is that we may not be a principal or party to the transaction. These are all just ways of saying the same thing. We are an impartial witness. We cannot notarize a document if our name is in the document, if we're signing the document, or have any direct or beneficial interest. Now, if we're talking about employees, you are allowed to notarize for your employer. And the reason why is because that's considered an indirect beneficial interest, unless, of course, that document would give you a raise. Can you notarize for family members? Well, you remember that you can notarize for family members. You can notarize for anybody, even your spouse. But just remember to use caution because we live in a community property state, which basically means you could have a beneficial interest without even realizing it. So what exactly does a notary do? I told you, we're not going to mess around. This is going to go very, very fast. We only do 4 things. We make sure the signer personally appears, we check their ID, and there are different IDs that we can take, like a passport or a driver's license. I mentioned before, you are not responsible. If somebody gives you a fake ID, they are committing a crime, not you. You have to use reasonable reliance. In other words, does the ID reasonably look good to you? If it does, then that works. You don't have to know how to spot a fake ID, in other words. The third thing that we always do is we put people in the journal, and the fourth thing that we do is we follow the notary procedure, also known as the Notary Act. We talked about 2 different notary acts, which are acknowledgments and jurats. In actuality, there are a lot of different notary acts, but in the real world, we really only do 2. That's why we spend the most time talking about them. So acknowledgments are very, very simple. We ask the person, do you acknowledge that this is your signature and you signed it voluntarily? They may have signed it ahead of time, or they can sign it in front of you. In the jurat, we have the person raise their right hand and we say, do you swear or affirm that this document is true? They say yes, and then we say, great, now you may sign the document. In other words, they must sign in front of you. The difference between swear or affirm is the use of the word God, but they both have the same legal standing. The person who is going under oath is referred to as an affiant, if you see that in a question on the test. Now let's talk about our jurisdiction. In other words, where we can notarize? Well, we can notarize anywhere within the state of California, but the document can be from any state, any country, and in any language. The reason why it can be in any language is because we only do 4 things. We make sure the signer personally appears, we check their ID, we put them in the journal, and we do the notary act, which 99% of the time will be acknowledging or swearing. So none of that has anything to do with the actual document itself. So that's why we can notarize a document in a different language. Another way to think about this is we notarize signatures on documents, not documents themselves. That's why we're not responsible for a document or the contents in the document. Unless you know a document is fraud, obviously, if you know a document is a fraudulent document, you cannot notarize it. You would be guilty of fraud yourself. The only thing we have to do is we must scan the document to verify its completeness. Just make sure all the pages are present. And when I say complete, I mean complete based on your experience. If you don't have a lot of experience with documents, then just make a reasonable estimation based on your own experience. Remember though, even though the document's in a different language, you must have direct communication between the signer and the notary. I give you that example where somebody used sign language and I said that we could write notes back and forth and that would be a form of direct communication. Another thing that we do is put people under oath. It's one of our notary powers that we may use every now and then. We basically say, do you swear to tell the truth? And we also confirm people's identity. This is probably one of our most important powers. Again, it's easy to do, but you have to understand that a notary confirming ID means much, much more than some random person confirming ID. Okay, now let's talk about how you go about becoming a notary. You have to be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident. So there are four steps. You're going to take your class, you're going to take your test, you're going to get your fingerprints and do your oath. You're also going to do your bond, and I'm going to talk about that as well. The class is very simple. You're already taking it right now. It's California State Approved class, and you're already almost done with it. You're going to take it at your own pace if you want to, or maybe you do this all at one time. There are two classes, a 6-hour class for new notaries, which you're about to finish, and recommissioning notaries can take a 3-hour class. But remember, you must do that 6 months before your commission expires. In other words, if your commission expires and it's been over 30 days, you're going to have to take that 6-hour class all over again. And then you're going to do your live scan fingerprinting. This is to get your background check done. The way it works is they take your fingerprints. They will then send those fingerprints to the DOJ and FBI. The DOJ and FBI will send the background check to the Secretary of State. Nobody gets to see your background check, not you, not the live scanner. Nobody else gets to see it except for the Secretary of State. So don't ask for the live scan operator for a copy of it because they don't have it. It's at the Secretary of State. Okay, so the steps are class, test, fingerprints, then the bond and the oath. So really quickly about the bond. First of all, it's public liability protection. That means it covers the public, not the notary. It's a $15,000 bond. You don't do cash checks or credit cards. You just get a $15,000 bond and they cost about $38 online. The way it works is that the notary is doing notaries for the public, also known as the obligee. You might see that in the test. It might say, who's the obligee? Well, we're talking about the public. And just in case the notary happens to be an evil notary and wants to commit fraud, that's the point of the bond. A surety company that's called a California-admitted surety company is there to provide that bond for a small fee, like I said, about $38, and that's $15,000 worth of protection for the public. However, if it is used, the notary must reimburse the surety company. That means there is no protection for you, so you want to get E&O insurance. All you need to know is you buy this bond online. It takes about 5 minutes. It's really cheap. And then you get that proof of purchase and you go to the county clerk's office and you give them the packet and the bond and they put you under oath. You could do this by mail. I don't recommend it, but you could. If you did do it by mail, you have to go to a notary in your business county and they will put you under oath and then send it by certified or registered mail. Remember, you have 30 days to do this, 30 days from the date that's on your commission, the commencement date, 30 days to file your oath and bond. Then you are a notary. Now let's talk about how you actually notarize documents. We only do four things: personally appear, check ID, put them in the journal, and you basically either do an acknowledgement or a jurat every day. I'm going to talk about check ID because personally appear, it speaks for itself. Make sure the person is in the room when you notarize. So when it comes to ID, remember, we cannot use personal knowledge, never, ever, ever use personal knowledge, but we used to use personal knowledge in California. That was something we could do, but now we can't. It is still acceptable ID in other states, so just keep that in mind in case it comes up on the test. Okay, so let's talk about the different IDs we're allowed to take. There are the tier one IDs. That's California driver's license or California ID card, a U.S. passport or U.S. passport card, an inmate ID or an inmate bracelet. You would only take the inmate IDs, though, if the inmate is currently in custody. You would probably be the notary who worked at the prison if that were the case. Remember, the PSPS are not required. The PSPS are required for the Tier 2 IDs, and that's a photograph, signature, physical description, and a serial number. The Tier 2 IDs are any state ID, like a driver's license from another state or a voting ID card from another state, a foreign passport or a consular card, a Canadian or Mexican driver's license, but not a Canadian or Mexican ID, just a Canadian or Mexican driver's license, a military ID, a California state employee card, or a tribal ID card. If they don't have a Tier 1 or a Tier 2 ID, you can get a Tier 3 ID, which is the credible witness, one credible witness, or two credible witnesses. Let me go ahead and talk about credible witnesses really quickly. First of all, you have a notary and you've got a signer, and they're sad because they don't have ID. So you find a credible witness who personally knows the notary and who personally knows the signer. One good way to think about the credible witness is they are a walking ID card for the signer. Remember, you have to put the credible witness under oath. You are going to say, do you swear that you personally know the signer? The signer is named in the document. The signer has no Tier 1 or Tier 2 ID and cannot access them, and that you have no beneficial or financial interest in the document. It's just a verbal oath. They're going to say, yes, I swear. Then you're going to say, great. Now, even though we know each other, I still need to see your Tier 1 or Tier 2 ID. And your friend, I say friend because they know you, will say, sure, and hand over their ID. Okay, so remember, if you don't take ID, do you remember how much the fine is? It's crazy. It's $10,000. So you want to make sure you're taking ID from the credible witness. Now, if that person does not exist, you can find two credible witnesses who know the signer but don't need to know the notary. The oath is the same. You're going to say the exact same thing, and they both will say, yes, I swear this time. And now, once you've done that, the signer has ID. Once again, take their IDs, or this time the fine is $10,000 times two. Oh my goodness. So one way I like to think about this is, no matter what you do, you're always going to be taking ID from somebody. You're either taking ID from the signer or you're taking ID from the credible witnesses. Next, you're going to do the notary journal. It's a record of every notary act you do. You're only allowed to have one sequential notary journal. Sequential means you can't skip lines or skip pages, and you must keep it in a locked and secured area at all times. You can't just leave it on your desk at a coffee table and walk away. The journal belongs to you and only you. Only you can make copies. If your employer wants to make copies of your journal, that's fine, but you have to supervise those copies. And that journal is yours after employment. It stays with you, because even if you didn't pay for it, it is your journal. Keep all of your journals until your commission ends. And then once you are no longer a notary for a period of more than 30 days, you take them to the county clerk's office. If you don't, that is a misdemeanor. That's willful failure to turn them to the county clerk's office, not negligent failure, which is another way of saying that it was an accident. Okay, how do we fill out the journal? I'll show you. You're going to write down your fee. You're going to write down the date and the time. You're going to write down the notary act, the character of the instrument, which is another way of saying the title of the document, the person's name and address, which are optional. Then you're going to write down the person's ID information. Make sure you get their serial number and expiration date. They sign the journal, and any additional information plus their right thumbprint. But remember, right thumbprints are only required if you're notarizing any kind of a deed, anything to do with real property, a power of attorney. If you don't get a right thumbprint, it's a $2,500 fine. And the exception to this rule was deed of reconveyance or trustee's deed resulting from foreclosure. Those don't require thumbprints. Deed of trust requires a right thumbprint. Trustee's deed does not. The next example I showed you for the journal is filling it out a few minutes later. And I said, even though that person is there and you're doing it all at the same time, you still need to get another notary line, because you have to have a new line for each signature that you're notarizing. And then I gave you an example of how to fill it out for a credible witness. Take a look in the signer's name column right there. Carla Davis, that's the person who is personally appearing and you are notarizing for. But that person does not have ID, so we use George Marlin as the credible witness. Now, over on this side, you have all that ID information, the passport and the passport number. That is not Carla's passport. That is George Marlin's passport. You happen to know George Marlin. You were friends with him, but you still got to take his ID. Otherwise, it's a $10,000 fine. Then you got Carla's signature and Carla's thumbprint. And then the additional information section, we had George sign it as well. Okay, finishing up with the journal, we're going to talk about making a photocopy of the journal. Anybody can ask for a photocopy of the journal. They must do so in writing, and they must provide the name of the document, the name of the signers, and the month and year in which it was notarized. And you must respond within 15 business days. Just take two pieces of paper and cover up the other ones, and then you can charge 30 whopping cents for that. If the journal is lost or stolen or destroyed or damaged or rendered unusable, immediately notify the Secretary of State. You're going to notify them by certified or registered mail, which basically means you're going to get a receipt. In that letter, you're going to write down the journal dates, the commission number, the expiration date of your commission, and a copy of any police report which may have been filed. Also, you have to start a brand new journal. Next thing we talked about is if a peace officer wants your journal, you must comply immediately. If you don't, it's a $2,500 fine. And once they've taken your journal, let the Secretary of State know within 10 days by a certified or registered mail. You're going to get a receipt for the journal from the peace officer and send a copy of that receipt to the Secretary of State. And once again, you're going to start a brand new journal. Remember, 10 days for a peace officer, 15 business days for a copy of your journal for a member of the public, and immediately if your journal is lost or stolen. Everything else is pretty much going to be 30 with one more exception, and that's 5 days, and I'll show you that in a second. Okay, so that covers personally appearing and checking ID and the journal. Now let's talk about acknowledgments. We know how to do an acknowledgment. We say, do you acknowledge that's your signature? Then we fill out the notarial certificate. The notarial certificate is usually printed here. Everything above the signatures is the document. Everything below is the notary certificate. And we talked about all the different parts of the notary certificate. I do want you to remember how to fill the notary certificate out. Remember, in the venue section, you're going to put where you're physically sitting. You put your date, put your name, common notary public, their name, draw a line, fix all the pronouns. And then the penalty of perjury clause basically means that if you are falsifying an acknowledgement, it is a $10,000 fine and forgery. There are no other $10,000 fines in the book, okay? So just remember, that's how you fill an acknowledgement out. Pretty simple to do. Then you're going to sign it. Then you're going to put your stamp on it. And guess what? It's notarized. If this acknowledgement certificate is not on the document, then you're going to get a loose certificate. That would be if the document had no wording or had unreadable wording or had incomplete wording, like part of it was only on page one and then the rest of it was on page two. Another example would be incorrect wording from pre-2015, which basically means it's missing the disclaimer stamp. Or if it was already filled out, like in the example we showed before, then you would fill out the acknowledgement certificate. But what if you have out-of-state documents? Well, remember, the document can be from anywhere, and you can use the other state's wording. Absolutely. We have to remember, though, that we may not violate California law. And the two things we're looking out for are personally known to me or authorized capacity. So if you see a document from out of state and has out of state wording for the acknowledgement, just read through it and see if it asks you to authorize if you're personally known to the signer or if it asks you to prove the authorized capacity. Then we're going to talk about how to do jurats really quickly. You put the person under oath and they say yes, and then they're allowed to sign the document. Okay, here is the jurat wording. Very easy to fill out. Make sure they signed it under oath, so they'll just cross it out. Don't use white out. And then you just fill this part out. You put the venue and the date and their name, cross out the yes, and sign it and put your stamp. If the wording is not on there, or if you have wording from out of state, in the case of a jurat, we cannot use out of state wording. So you just cross it out and then use your jurat stamp. Now the jurat wording for California is on there, and now you can sign it and put your stamp. And that's it. That's how you do acknowledgments and jurats. And that's going to encompass about 99% of your notary business. For the test, the differences between the acknowledgement and jurat are the acknowledgement may be signed ahead of time. You can use out-of-state wording. And the signer acknowledges they signed the document under their own free will. And the jurat must be signed in front of you, must use the California wording, and the signer swears or affirms the document is true. In either case, always look out for the words personal knowledge or authorized capacity, because those two are things we are not allowed to do in California. And when it comes to notarizing foreign documents, remember, we are notarizing the signatures. So just make sure the document is complete, even if it's in a foreign language. A blank space is a blank space. But the notary wording must be in English. If it's not, then you have to attach a certificate or use your Juret stamp. And you still must be able to communicate directly without an interpreter. I also said try to identify the document if you can. If you can figure out what the document is, write that down in your journal. If you cannot figure out what the document is, then just write down document was in a foreign language. Now let's talk about putting the stamp on a document. You can have two stamps in any ink color as long as it's photographically reproducible. And you must keep it in a locked and secured area at all times. It is yours after you leave employment, just like the journal can only be used for notarization. You cannot put it on anything that is not an official notary act and destroy it after it expires. There are certain things you're looking out for. Number one, there's your name. Number two, your commission number, the words notary public, your county, your expiration date, the Great Seal of California, and finally the manufacturer ID number, which was added in 1992. The seals can come in rectangular or in circular fashion, in a serrated or in a milled edged border. If they are circular, they cannot be more than 2 inches. If they are rectangular, they cannot be more than 2.5 inches by 1 inch, but they can be smaller. When you put your seal in a document, make sure it's not too light or too dark, and make sure it doesn't touch anything else. You can just go ahead and use your little stamp if you run out of room. And don't get into the bad habit of stamping several documents like that. I don't know where notaries came up with this crazy idea, but that is never, ever, ever allowed. We just stamp whatever document. And if you want to indicate in your journal how many pages the document was, that's fine. Do you want to use an embosser? Well, you can use an embosser, but it must be photographically reproducible, which means you would have to find a way to put ink in there. And I'm not sure how to do that. It's not a very common practice. We typically just use the ink stamp. Now, in order to get your notary seal, you're going to get that notary packet, and in there is going to be a certificate of authorization to manufacture notary public seals. You're going to send that to a seal manufacturing company. They're going to stamp that and then send that to the Secretary of State. And now the Secretary of State knows what your seal looks like. If something happens to your seal, if it's lost or stolen or it's rendered unusable, immediately notify the Secretary of State, just like the journal, and they will issue you a new certificate within 5 days. The only document that we notarize without a notary stamp is a California subdivision map. So if you get a California subdivision map, use that special pen they give you and write down your name, your county, and your expiration date, but not your commission number. Okay, let's talk about the other notary acts that we don't do quite as often. The first one was giving a verbal oath. It's the same procedure as the Juret, except that there's no document involved. But you're still putting an item in your journal. It's an oath. It's an official notary act, just like an acknowledgement or Juret. The second one was performing depositions. This is usually done by specialized notaries who take spoken testimony and transcribe it. And if they are a court reporter, they can transcribe it in shorthand. It's $30 plus $7 for the oath and $7 for the certificate. The other notary act we do is making certified copies. This is an official notary act, just like acknowledgments and jurats. Making a certified copy of a document is a notary act. Other states certify copies of all kinds of documents, but in California, we only certify 2. Powers of attorney and a copy of our own journal. Very, very simple. Someone brings you a power of attorney, you get the copy or make the copy yourself, attach a California copy certification of power of attorney form to it, and now the copy is certified and has the same force and effect as the original. Same thing goes with the journal. To make a certified copy of the journal, it's very simple. But what you need to know is that it's different from a regular copy of your journal. This can only be done if it's done from a subpoena, a court order, or from a request from the Secretary of State. If the Secretary of State wants a certified copy of your journal, you must respond within the time specified in that request. Just make a photocopy of that particular line item and then attach the journal entry certification form. That's how you make certified copies of power of attorney and journals. couples. The other notary act we do is called protests and confidential marriages, a very antiquated law in which you're working for a company and making protests for that company for non-payments. Probably not going to come up in the real world. And confidential marriages are something you can apply to do if you wish at the county clerk's office. The last one we talk about is subscribing witness. This one tends to confuse people, but I'm going to make it really easy. You got a signer who's in the hospital and cannot appear in front of the notary. So you have a subscribing witness who appears in front of the signer. The signer says, since we know each other, I trust you to take this document to a notary for me. I acknowledge that I've signed it. Please sign it as well. The subscribing witness signs it as a subscribing witness and then takes it to the notary. The notary will then take a look at the document and notarize the subscribing witness's signature, since that's the person who's personally appeared. Then what you do is you put the subscribing witness under oath and you say, do you personally know the signer? The signer is the name of the document. The signer asked you to have this notarized on their behalf, and you either saw the principal sign the document or heard them acknowledge their signature. Yes, I swear. Great. Now I need to identify you with a tier 3 ID, which is a credible witness. So the mutual friend shows up and they say, hello, other friend. I will be the credible witness for the subscribing witness. Even though we know each other, here is my ID. So take a look at this diagram. Here it is. The notary personally knows the credible witness who personally knows the subscribing witness who personally knows the signer. Then you fill out the proof of execution by subscribing witness form. Remember, this is not an acknowledgement. It is not a jurat. It is a separate deal called the proof of execution. And in your journal, it goes in as such. It is a notary type and goes in your journal that way. Okay, and then you get the ID. But remember, this is the ID for the credible witness who is there to ID the subscribing witness. You don't need to get a thumbprint. Why? Well, because when you're doing this, you can't do it on jurat documents and thumbprint documents. So in other words, you cannot do a subscribing witness on any deeds, any powers of attorney, but you could do it on a trustee's deed or a deed of reconveyance. So the last run through of subscribing witness is, somebody cannot appear in front of a notary. The subscribing witness will meet the signer and take the document to the notary. The notary puts them under oath, fills out the proof of execution certificate, and identifies them with a credible witness. Now, we talked about some other situations that might come up, like if somebody is physically disabled or illiterate. So we said they can sign by a mark. It doesn't have to be an X, just whatever mark they can do under their own power. You still need to take their ID, and you still have to communicate with them directly. So the way it worked is this. We got the notary and the signer who cannot sign the document. They say, I'm sorry, I can't sign my own signature. No problem. We just need to find two random people who can be witnesses. So those two random people show up and you say, hi there, nice to meet you. Will you please watch this gentleman make the mark? Nice to meet you both. Sure, go ahead. So the document signer makes the mark and the two witnesses watch the mark being made, and then they will sign the document themselves right there next to the mark. That's it. I do not need to see your IDs, but Mr. Signer, I will need to see your ID. So the document will look like this when it's all done. Okay, you've got the mark right there. That's the signer's mark. And then you've got witness number one, witness number two. Remember, they can be anybody as long as they have no beneficial interest. They could even be the credible witnesses. But of course, in that case, you're going to take their ID. In the journal, it's going to look like this. So far, doesn't look like anything special. Why? That's because this is just like any other notary. You're getting his ID and everything else is fine. The only difference is he can't sign his name. So he puts an X, and witness number one will sign John Doe by Vicky Smith. If that person has to leave, you could also do it yourself. Okay, and then you can get their thumbprint if it's a deed. And that's how you notarize for a signature by mark. The other special circumstances, if somebody wants you to notarize an affidavit of identity, this is a jurat. If they do and it has the birth date or age of the person and a photograph or thumbprint of the person, then you must certify their age with their ID and a copy of their birth certificate. It's the only time you see birth certificate on the test. Next, let's talk about managing your commission. First of all, if you are an independent notary, that means you're self-employed or a mobile notary or a storefront notary. Basically, you cannot refuse service. You must provide the service or make arrangements or appointments if somebody wants you to notarize, but you're not required to travel. If you are an employee notary, you can have your services limited via a limited service agreement between you and your employer. You can also have a fee remission agreement. That's really up to you and your employer. The journal and the seal, however, do belong to you, and you may notarize after office hours. Remember, employee notaries do not have have a conflict of interest because they have an indirect beneficial interest as long as their salary is independent of the notarization. And then I gave you this list. On the left-hand side, we said they may notarize. On the right-hand side, they said we may not notarize. The easy way to remember this is that if it has two E's at the end or an OR at the end, or it's a beneficiary, you may not notarize. Then we talked about public employee notaries. If you are working for a public agency, you can only notarize for your employer. You must remit your fees and you may not notarize after office hours. You must also resign your commission after you stop working there. Remember, you're working for the taxpayer, so they don't want you making money on the taxpayer. And if you are a public agency employee, you should have a letter that you're going to submit to the proctors when you take the test. If you are a military notary, you must be a federal civil service employee and a U.S. citizen. You can only notarize on one base and you may not notarize after office hours or charge fees. If you're changing your name, fill out a name change application form. You have to get a new oath and bond at the county clerk's office and get a new notary seal and do this within 30 days. Your commission number and expiration date will stay the same, but you can keep using your old name until you receive your amended commission from the Secretary of State. If you change your address, that's your business address, residence address, or your mailing address, or your business name, notify the Secretary of State by certified mail within 30 days. You don't have to get a new oath and bond in that case. One of the things I wanted you to remember for the test, a name change application goes by regular mail. An address change application goes by certified mail. If you resign your commission, you don't want to be a notary anymore, write the Secretary of State a letter with your commission name, your commission number, and your expiration date, including your county, and you're going to send your journals to the county clerk's office and destroy your seal within 30 days. If something unfortunate happens to you, have a designated representative notify the Secretary of State immediately and send your journals to the county clerk's office and destroy your seals. Also, we have two separate duties to understand when it comes to responding to the Secretary of State. We must respond by certified mail within 30 days when requested to do so, and we must respond within the time specified for certified copies of journal entries. Let's talk about advertising. Basically, you cannot use the words notario or notario publico. It's a $1,500 fine of the first offense and permanent revocation of the second offense. If you are advertising in a different language, that's fine, but you have to use this phrase and post your fees. And if you don't, it's a $1,500 fine of the first offense and permanent revocation on the second offense. If you are an immigration consultant, you may not advertise that you are a notary, and only someone who is qualified and bonded as an immigration consultant can help someone fill out immigration documents. You can be an immigration consultant and a notary, but you may not advertise both. Let's talk about charging notary fees. Remember, you don't actually have to charge, but there is a difference between notary fees and travel fees. Now, the person can pay however you can accept. Most people just pay by cash, and they don't usually ask for a receipt. But remember, if somebody asks for a receipt, you have to give a receipt. If you don't, you can be fined 3 times the amount of the receipt, okay? Just make sure you separate your travel fees and your notary fees. The fees are $15 for acknowledgement or jurat per signature, $15 for a certified copy of a power of attorney, 30 cents for a copy of your journal, $15 for the oath or affirmation, that's a verbal oath or affirmation, $15 to help someone fill out immigration documents if you're an immigration consultant, and $30 for depositions, plus $7 for the oath and $7 for the certificate. You cannot charge for notarizing any kind of voting materials like circulators, affidavits, and you cannot charge a veteran to notarize their benefit insurance or pension documents. I also said that in regards to loan signing, typically the Notary Act is actually free, and that's because you're getting paid a flat fee by the lending company. Now, you may not practice law. It means you cannot give legal advice. That means you basically cannot help someone fill out documents. You cannot choose the Notary Act. They have to tell you if they want to do an acknowledgement or a jurat. That's not your call to make. Remember, everything above the signatures is the document. You're not responsible for that. Everything below the signature is the notary certificate. They're not responsible for that. It's very important you have that distinction. If they have any questions, they have to ask an attorney. If you decide to practice law, your license will be denied, suspended, or revoked, and you might get in trouble in a civil suit as well. It's also a $1,000 fine. So let's talk about the different types of notary misconduct because they might appear on the test. First of all, any notary who is not remaining in compliance with child support can have their commission suspended or revoked. Now let's talk about the different categories for for misconduct. There are infractions, which are name change and address change, and a $500 fine. Now, misdemeanors, there's quite a bit of them, and this usually comes into play if you do something willfully, okay? Like you willfully damage or destroy your journal, or you willfully do not notify the Secretary of State of a lost or damaged or stolen notary seal, or if you willfully do something you're not supposed to with the notary certificate or the notary wording. Those are a little bit hard to remember, so I said it's easier to remember their infractions and the felonies, because the felonies have to do with real estate documents or forging an acknowledgement. Another way to look at this is in the fine amount. So we've got $750 fines. That is for negligence, basically doing something by accident, like failing to give the oath or affirmation by accident, failing to complete an acknowledgement at the time of notarization by accident, or overcharging. Then there's $1,000. That's easy to remember because it's giving legal advice, and that's it. Now, $1,500 is doing anything you're not supposed to willfully, okay? One way to think about this is $750 for negligence and double the amount, $1,500, for willful, for doing something on purpose. And then there's two others you have to remember. There's $2,500 for thumbprints or not complying with a peace officer with your journal, and $10,000 for falsifying an acknowledgement or for not taking IDs from the credible witness. Now, remember, the way it works is this. If you're going to have your commission revoked, you're going to surrender your seal to the court. The court will send your seal to the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of State will destroy your seal. There is a statute of limitations on 4 years from the date of discovery, and you have a right to a hearing or investigation. Finally, we take a look at this chart. This chart gives you a breakdown of all the notary fees. You got $500 for the infractions. You got $750 for negligent failure. You've got $1,000 for practicing law. And then you've got the $1,500 fines. Those are harder to remember, but it's easier to remember the $2,500 fines and the $10,000 fines. And just make sure you understand the color coding there, okay? And what's a misdemeanor and what's a misdemeanor if it's deemed willful. Then you've got the misdemeanors with no specific fine amount and the felonies. The felonies are easier to remember because it generally has to do with real estate. By the way, the very last one, filing false documents, $75,000 fine, that's for anybody who files a false document at the county clerk's office. If one of your customers commits fraud and you were not aware of that, and they took that to the county clerk's office and filed it, you would not be responsible that they committed fraud, but they would be charged with a $75,000 fine. Now remember, anything that's on this chart, that's in this table, if it comes up, it is grounds for denial or suspension or revocation of your commission. But I don't expect that's going to happen to you. And I hope that you're not going to have to look at this chart for another 4 years. And that's it. That is the speed run of everything we talked about. We just condensed an entire 6-hour course into a very short amount of time. I really hope that you took the time to sit back, relax, and absorb this material, because that's going to sink directly into your subconscious. And I think it's going to get you super prepared for this test.